Welcome to Pod Drop. I'm your host, Mark Stanush, and just over a year ago when I first launched the show, one of my main goals was to create something that was evergreen, that could, you know, last, you know, stand the test of time. I realize it's a little easier said than done, especially considering that this first drop that I released was so much about technology, and technology changes fast, and that's especially true of the video game industry, it being so fast moving, and this year has been no different. Not only has Xbox, the subject of the very first episode, not only has Xbox made some major moves in trying to become the, quote, Netflix of gaming, but two new major players have also joined the fray. This topic is definitely worth revisiting. So joining me to break it all down are two familiar voices. After getting through my third drop without my go-to guest, the first one I've ever been able to do without help of show, I brought him back on, double-dipping this time around, actually. Shoah Bali, the Sportsnet fan, 590, producer extraordinaire, nice enough to join me to talk some video games. Thanks for joining, Shoah.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me again, Mark.
And joining over the phone from the last episode, you might remember Riley Little, editor of OK Cool and contributor to Game Rant, among many other publications. Riley, thanks for taking the time to join us over the phone.
Yeah, no, happy to.
So let's get right into it. We're going to start with Xbox, just because that was the one that we talked so much about. Last year, the big news was every new release was coming to Game Pass, and it kind of legitimized that service. And that Game Pass service was, you know, their first attempt at the Netflix of gaming. This idea of a massive catalog that you can download and, you know, play at your own time. But now they've mentioned their vision, and right now it's just called Project xCloud. And to quickly sum it up, the idea is that the Xbox service, the Xbox Live service along with Game Pass, is going to be available to other devices, even as far as like including something like Nintendo Switch, like a direct competitor. But the way that they thought of it was their, even the mobile market, like a install base of over 2 billion, they're opening their doors to letting their games be played across all these different, you know, devices any way the player wants to. What was your, and before we get to the big question, what was your kind of initial thought of this? We'll start with you, Riley.
Sure. I think it's the next logical step for gaming, to be completely honest. I think that accessibility and is paramount for something like that, like a streaming service. Mobile is a great market to break into. And I think that the cost of something like this is, like, if you're basing it off of Game Pass, for example, is minimal. So it makes everything a lot more accessible for people, and you're able to create behemoths like Fortnite, or you're able to create a streaming service that rivals Netflix. And I think it's, I really do think it's the future of gaming.
I think portability is great, is a really big, a really important factor of that too. I mean, Riley just mentioned accessibility, and I think for something like Xbox Game Pass, which was, of course, only previously available on the home console Xbox, which is not exactly easily movable, I think it's pretty cool to have it come to things like mobile devices or the Nintendo Switch, which were obviously, especially if we're going to focus on the Switch, we're obviously designed with portability in mind. So I think in that sense, it makes almost too much sense, which honestly doesn't happen very often in the world of video games.
I think it's definitely, when you say it makes a lot of sense, I think that is the consumer view, a little bit in my mind at least, because I think it is a very consumer-friendly initiative, the same way that I think Game Pass is super consumer-friendly. But there is the big question I wanted to ask you guys is, do you think, how does Project xCloud and the current Microsoft trajectory or initiatives, do they clash in a way? And to kind of just sum that question up, does Microsoft risk cannibalizing their own hardware sales by giving this entire access and catalog to everyone else's hardware? Riley?
I mean, that's the big question right now, right? I personally feel like no. And I feel like no, because right now we're at a bit of a crossroads where we can look at the streaming and say, okay, yeah, that's accessible. Yeah, it's cheap. Yeah, a ton of people are going to subscribe to that sort of service, which is why Xbox is slow rolling it out. So what you see right now is, yeah, that they have greater ambitions for something like that to move beyond their own hardware. And they will act on that as technology catches up and allows them to provide a better platform in order to boost engagement and appeal to more consumers. But right now, if you want the best place to play Halo Infinite, for example, owning the physical hardware that's able to run that game is the best way to go about doing that. And then vice versa, likewise, what they're also doing is they're complementing their library on Xbox through Nintendo Switch by allowing games like Minecraft to link with Xbox platforms, and then also bringing games like Cuphead. And then we have rumored software like Ori and the Blind Forest, and then also probably a catalog from Rare, and even rumors of Halo, Forza, and Gears of War.
I mean, I'm also kind of the kind of person who likes having a physical copy, so I might be a bad person to ask this question to, because I think going forward, even if that Xbox, for example, does fully commit in the future to, you know, no more physical stuff, I'm the kind of person who likes to have things in my hands, like to feel it. I don't like to buy ebooks. I don't like to buy digital copies of movies. Like, I like to. Maybe it's an obsessive compulsive thing with me where I like to collect things. But I think in that sense, at least for the Xbox, I also don't think they risk it, because, like you said, Riley, I think the industry seems to be, at least in a slow fashion, seems to be moving more and more and more and more towards this whole, you know, non-physical media thing. And I think we probably will eventually get there, and people like me will have to, you know, be forced to bite the bullet if you want to continue playing video games. But I don't think necessarily we're at the point now where it's going to happen, at least wholesale, if that makes sense.
I think the idea, or at least in their mind, is they already have the Xbox audience, right? This isn't a product really for the console owners, right? Otherwise they'd be playing on their own consoles. It's to kind of expand and push some of their kind of platform initiatives, platform being something like Game Pass, which is a great deal for gamers, and something that I've been a subscriber to for a while now. Though I've been a little life hack for anyone listening, and I hope not everyone does this, so that nobody does this. I always cancel my subscription as soon as I make it, so that when it lapses, it doesn't auto renew, and they just keep offering me like incredible deals to get back on. So anyone who does it, like if you want to keep getting like a month for a buck, just keep unsubscribing. But if everyone does this, it might not work. So little secret for the listener. But that's just one service they have, because the big news recently, I wouldn't say big news, is if anything, it was kind of inevitable. Me and Sho talked about it in the episode a year ago, is they announced that they are intending to package Xbox Live Gold and Xbox Live Game Pass into one. I think they're calling it Xbox Live Game Pass Ultimate or something, right? Just throw an Ultimate at the end, or a Pro or whatever. You're good to go. There was also another interesting one, that initiative I want to talk about a little bit, that kind of clashes with this idea a bit. This was something in the States only that I was fascinated about, and I think I brought it up to show, but they had something called, I believe it was Xbox Access, and the idea was you could basically get an interest-free loan on a console, that you could go to a Microsoft store. We only have a couple here in Canada, but you would be able to take home the Xbox along with, you know, 2 years of Game Pass and 2 years of Gold, and you basically get it all at a slightly discounted rate and a no interest, you pay your monthly kind of thing. I recently checked right before I came on to see if the service is still available, and they canceled it as of December. Do you think that those two services, the idea of trying to get the consoles into people's hands and this idea of you don't even need a console to play, are at all at odds? Then that might be an issue strictly from like a messaging standpoint?
Yeah, that's kind of a bit of a grab bag there. I feel like making systems in general more affordable is generally a good idea. I also see people who shouldn't be committing to something like that doing so.
Oh yeah,
because the price point is very appealing, and obviously you don't want to, like, if that's something you're passionate about or that you feel like you want that product, you're probably going to try to make it work. But I think in general, juggling too many monthly things, as with streaming services, as with anything, can be problematic. But I mean, if you're talking about a $500 console, I feel like the vast majority of people would be able to make that work. I'm for it. I think accessibility is great, but I also feel like they probably canceled it for a reason.
I get the sense that, I mean, because you go to places like, you know, in Canada here, you go to places like Best Buy, or you go to, you know, even if you go to other large electronic retailers, like, you know, even things that don't necessarily only sell electronics, like The Brick or, you know, The Bay or something like that. And for pretty much any large purchase, whether it's a TV or a video game console or even a sofa or something, or a dishwasher or a fridge, you can, you get these, you know, pay it off in installments. And I feel like pretty much, you know, I feel like video game consoles had until relatively recently been exempt from that, right? You were more or less expected to pay the whole thing up front. And so I kind of agree with you, Riley, that, like, in that sense, I think accessibility is a great thing, because perhaps you might want a new video game console and these things are coming out with relatively, you know, increasing frequency, perhaps. I mean, maybe that's not always going to be the case, or maybe that's slowly decreasing, but I mean, not everyone is always guaranteed to be able to afford the hefty price tag that comes with it. So I support it, but like you said, they probably canceled it for a reason, which is probably that not a lot of people were opting for it. I bet people were just paying for it up front.
Hey, if it was in Canada, I would have an Xbox One X. Let's just say that. I would have been able to convince the wife that maybe we could make this work. But I think what's so interesting is, and we kind of touched upon, like, how the industry is at this crossroads. And in one case, consoles, if you are to believe, you know, the streaming services are about to get into two more, are kind of, you know, going to be the future and might, you know, phase out consoles. On the other hand, consoles are kind of adapting this sort of, like, you know, iterative process where it's like, there's an Xbox One, an Xbox One S, an Xbox One X. There's going to be an Xbox Scorpio that also plays all the games from the last one, but also, you know, it's just not Scorpio. So that's X, but
the Anaconda is the code name for one of them. And then
Scarlet
is the other. Yeah.
So it is that kind of that weird crossroads. And I just think, you know, as much as it's fun to get together and talk about it, I do think there is kind of a place for both. But let's move on to the next big player, someone who's not as, you know, seasoned in the industry would be Google. And Google has announced their plans for Google Stadia. And Google Stadia is a service where the idea is any device that can run Chrome, the internet browser, you'd be able to play some of these high-end games. And they kind of demoed this with Assassin's Creed Odyssey, a game that you would need one of the new consoles, or of course a high-end PC to run. And the tech behind it is, you know, somewhat interesting. It's they basically, you know, bought a million servers, and you're basically like, you're putting in an input, and the input's going to that place, and it's basically playing the game that's running on a high-end PC somewhere else. Cool stuff. But one thing that I suspect, and I wanted to get your opinions on this, and the big question is, how will Google be able to compete if it's just bringing these high-end games from other developers, these third-party developers, if it doesn't have its own exclusives? And as of now, there's been no word of their idea of coming with exclusives to this platform. Do you think that this platform, from a place that isn't familiar with gaming as much as Xbox, stands a chance, Riley?
Yeah, no, they haven't officially announced anything yet, but I know they have exclusives in the works, mainly from other publishers. Like, Sega's a big supporter. So I think they're resurrecting several franchises from Sega that are going to be exclusive to the Stadia platform. And then also they launched their own game studios, which they kind of briefly touched upon. They brought out Jade Raymond, who's known for Assassin's Creed and several other projects with EA after she departed Ubisoft. So they do have plans for something like that. But I think it's just kind of a wait and see, because right now, our exclusive is going to help, yes, but also you need a reliable platform, and I don't know if they've proven that yet.
Do you think that, so with you, Riley, do you think that the Google name carries weight in a way with non-gamers more so than gamers? Or, like, do you think that the money and just that name give Google you know, a head start as opposed to like a brand new player in the space?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, at this point, everyone knows what a Google is. Like, if you're looking for something, you're going to Google it. They're going to be able to tap into those algorithms to promote their own product. And since it's something that you're able to, like, if you search for Assassin's Creed, the first thing that's going to pop up is the Google Stadia version of Assassin's Creed Odyssey or whatever new iteration they have of that franchise. And you're going to be able to click it and play it right there. So, yeah, I think they're going to be able to be very competitive about this. It just depends on, ultimately, if their audience is going to be receptive to the quality of the product.
I love that. You're talking... You took a step ahead of me. You went like, it's more about the infrastructure, right? It's not even the name. It's like they have all of this already built to kind of get people their product into their faces before anyone else's. And I know what you're saying. You keep bringing up that you don't think the product might be up to snuff. Are you talking kind of about like latency issues? Because it's one thing to play Assassin's Creed Odyssey, but imagine trying to play like, you know, we like Smash Brothers a lot. Imagine trying to play Smash Brothers online and I'm trying to wait for a server to remember that I wanted to use a shield. You know what I mean? Like there's just a little too much for a twitchier game, whether it be a first-person shooter or a fighting game. Is that where your reservation's kind of coming from?
Entirely, yeah. I think basically what endangers their goals right now at this point is latency issues. And based on what I've heard from people that demoed it on the show floor at CES, I don't know if they're up to snuff quite yet. Comparatively, while Google has sort of the means to market these games directly to consumers that may not have thought about purchasing things otherwise, Xbox is slow rolling it by slowly porting their games to like Nintendo Switch to slowly get those IPs in front of a new audience so that they familiarize themselves with the streaming service that they hope to promote in the years to come. So I think 10 years from now, we'd be having a very different discussion, but it's just how quick you're able to bring people in.
I feel like, too, one of the issues, at least in a more broader sense with Google Stadia, is that I remember when I watched the launch trailer, and I say this as someone who was, you know, I would say relatively into video games, perhaps more than the average person. And I watched that trailer or I guess launch reveal, whatever you want to call it. And I had no idea what this product was or like what they were really trying to sell me on. Maybe it was because of the whole aesthetic of they used the idea of being in a stadium and the communal experience very, very integral to their marketing plan. And I say that as someone who's also a huge sports fan, as I know you guys are. And I remember being a little confused as to what they were like. Was I being offered as some kind of streaming service for sports, or were they trying to liken sports to video games? I don't know. It was kind of like, it was an odd feeling to watch that and to have it finish and have applause and stuff happen and then not really know what it was. It was kind of weird. And of course, in the coming weeks, I think we've learned a little bit more, like you guys were talking about latency and so on, and you know what the goals are and the various publishers and games, which I think are really ambitious. But I mean, I remember the last time Google launched something like this, and I feel like it was it just called Google Plus, like the Facebook thing? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, their failed attempt at being Facebook.
Yeah, and I mean, I really hope that this is not going to be another thing like that. Like, I hope this is something that changes, you know, how people look and interact with this kind of streaming service for video games. But I mean, you know, I remain a bit of a skeptic.
Riley, did you have any thoughts about like their logo or branding or some of that messaging? Because obviously you seem a little skeptical about the actual tech behind it, but where do you stand on the messaging?
I guess it depends on, I mean, I don't know. I see YouTube creators, complaining about the platform quite often. Cause I know what they want to do is they want to tap into the audience that some of the bigger like game content creators have in order to sell them product. I mean, that was kind of, they brought out MatPat during the presentation from Game Theorists. So, I mean, you can have your own opinions about that guy. I've heard some mixed ones, but I feel as if their entire, the Stadia aspect is smart, I guess. Stadia, however you want to pronounce it, I suppose. It's like stadium, but I really think that what It ultimately just depends on how competitive these people can be with it, because I think that people viewing this product, they're going to want to view some high caliber play and stuff like that, which doesn't happen. I mean, it all comes back to latency in the end.
Yeah, they are. I mean, they are trying to push this idea that, like, there's the crowd play allows viewers to play games with their favorite streamers, like, just, you know, so much more seamlessly. The same idea, being able to record and broadcast to YouTube simultaneously. All these things sound so good, but I'm a little bit hesitant when you mentioned they're already having a little few technical issues. But at the same time, a theme of this show, or at least this drop that we're revisiting from a year ago, is that a lot of these technological issues, as odd as it sounds and as reductive as it sounds, they do kind of iron themselves out as things just get better. But I wonder,
right.
As the games improve, right? We're only, you know, 18 months, maybe 2 years at most away from brand new consoles. As the games get better, even if, you know, finally Assassin's Creed Odyssey runs perfectly once the internet catches up, are the consoles pushing the boundaries and pushing, you know, what it means to be a next-gen game going to then just make the streaming services, Project X included, have to take a step back and be like, we can't keep up with the physical consoles? That's where my hesitation kind of rests with all of these streaming services.
I think consoles, I think the next generation of consoles are just bridging a gap. I think that the tech isn't quite there yet, which is why Xbox is already committed to new hardware, which is why PlayStation has announced new hardware, and they are going to be supporting physical media with it. I'm sure the Xbox Scarlet, or whatever they end up calling it, is going to do the same.
And Xbox 2. The Xbox 2.
Yeah, the Xbox 2, :3. Or whatever they
are. That would be a confusing. I love that one though. 2:4. Sorry to interrupt you there, but it's with these next consoles, you kind of mentioned, you know, them bridging the gap. It's definitely also too a Microsoft pushed thing. And this is maybe the cynic in me, but every time, and we've seen it from PlayStation 2 to 360 and from 360 to PS4, those being the market leaders in each at each step, every time a new console comes up or out is a new chance for the install base to switch over, right? I think PlayStation 4, so the people at Sony, the people behind it, ideally they hope they don't want another console. I think Xbox is trying to get some of that market share back, and I think a bit of an Xbox fanboy, I guess, but a bit of it, I think they have established a lot of the infrastructure and able to impress people to maybe come over. They just need to get the exclusives, which they've also worked hard at by signing a bunch of new developers, which wasn't a focus on our last episode a year ago, but it's definitely something to look at. So the last player is kind of the one I think most unique, but also one that has no shortage of money at their backing, and that's Apple Arcade. So Apple Arcade, a little different, similar in the idea that it's a streaming service that also allows you to play offline and all this, but on Apple devices. So that could be your Apple TV, could be your Mac, you know, a platform which has historically, you know, been a bit behind on being able to play games. It could be your iPhone, and, you know, same idea. Here's a big catalog. Their emphasis seems to be on exclusives, but it's also been very clear that those aren't going to be AAA per se. So we're talking more about, you know, indie games. And I think that might be the right strategy, but I want to get your guys' thoughts. Just your initial thoughts about Apple Arcade as, you know, when you first heard about it.
I feel like for me, I like the idea in theory, but I think if I had to pick an Apple, I don't have a MacBook. I guess I should preface this by saying that the Apple products that I personally own, I have an iPhone and I have an Apple TV. And so it would be cool to be able to play some Apple games, whatever they may be, on my Apple TV. That would be really neat. But I think in terms of what I would play the most would probably be games on my phone. I mean, I personally, as someone who lives in a city where we commute a lot underground, I would love to play games on my phone that don't require the internet. And I actually, something that comes to mind is there's this game I started playing recently. It's called Reigns, and it's a kind of like a, it's almost like a card game per se, where you swipe right or left, and that kind of makes these overarching decisions as you try to reign over a kingdom or something like that. And it's a pretty easy, all things considered, game to play. It's pretty straightforward. It's pretty self-explanatory. You know, even if you're not into that kind of thing, I think it's pretty, you know, easy to get into. And I think Apple would be well served to get into those kind of games. You know, I think it'd be kind of neat. And I don't know what you think, Riley, but I would love to get more kind of simple storytelling games that, you know, capture your attention without the need of the internet.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the beauty of what Apple's offering, because unlike Stadia, you're able to actually download the games across any form of hardware. So you'll be able to play it underground and stuff like that. So, I mean, that's a huge win for anyone with a mobile phone that might be traveling or does have to commute. I think they're absolutely walking into that audience and giving them something that they've been, you know, hoping for.
This has definitely struck me as perhaps the best companion for someone who's a hardcore gamer like ourselves, right? Whereas like Google Stadia, I think the tech is cool, especially if they nail it. But I was like, I already have my consoles. That's how I'm going to play. But if I were an iPhone user, which I've been in the past, this would be a more of a compliment, and especially when they talk about exclusives. And I like that they're very open about that. And they've mentioned that they were just recently that they're willing to put $500 million behind it, right? So it's almost like it's too big to fail. Exclusives. If you could, what would be your dream developer or even just a game, like a popular franchise, what would you want to see? And keep in mind that they're thinking, you know, more indie, at least in the style of the game. So it might not be AAA, but maybe you can still bring in a well-known name. What would be your dream? We'll start with show.
I think for me, and you're saying dream, so I'm saying this probably knowing that this will likely never happen, but I would love to play a Telltale game on my iPhone. And that'd be really cool. I mean, I think, I remember when I played Tales from the Borderlands, I think, for the very first time, which was a blast, or, you know, The Wolf Among Us and stuff. And I know there are, you know, ways to get games like that on your iPhone, but I think it'd be cool to get, I guess what I'm saying, new stories from the Telltale crew. Maybe it's The Wolf Among Us 2, or which was announced, and then we're probably not going to ever get that now, or, you know, another season to the Game of Thrones one that's been popular recently, especially as we record this. You know, the things like that. I think the Telltale style of games were always a really big favorite of mine. I think I've played like literally every single one of them. So I think it'd be cool to have that on my phone.
Right. Let me guess. Banjo-Kazooie.
That's the answer for everything. Yeah. That's tough. Like what kind of if I were Apple, I'd be trying to lock down stuff with PopCap games, like Plants vs. Zombies, like all those sorts of things that people have you traditionally flock to. I'd lock down Angry Birds. Like those are the kinds of games that I think people traditionally associate with their Apple devices. But again, like show, if they could lock down Telltale games, that would, if they could like save that company and get people working on stuff exclusively for Apple products and platforms, I think that would change the game. Like all of a sudden they'd have a service that a lot of people are like paying attention to.
I think those kind of things, I think at least for me, the combination of mobile games, like you just mentioned, you know, Plants vs. Zombies, Angry Birds, so on. And that would be one aspect that I would really want. And I also want, I think, again, to go back to something that probably would never happen because of, I think, I want to say they're never going to be let go of this contract, but BioWare. I would love to see some kind of BioWare mobile game.
Perhaps, Anthem for iPhone?
Anthem for iPhone. Can you imagine? Oh my gosh, my phone's battery would die probably in the first 20 minutes
that
of
or
playing.
Catch on fire.
Yes, yeah, so it would explode spontaneously in my pocket, probably. But it'd be cool to see some kind of BioWare storytelling, you know, that was akin to Dragon Age or Mass Effect or even Jade Empire, things like that, Knights of the Old Republic. Like the kind of older games that, you know, they could still put a little bit of storytelling oomph into for your phone. Because, I mean, I don't know, we have these little supercomputers in our pocket. I'm sure they could do a little more than let me Google where the nearest McDonald's is, right?
Yeah, I would love to see another dream, pipe dream that would probably never happen, but like a huge, like someone who's never really delved into the mobile space, like Blizzard. And I think I mean, they're famous a lot, or they've kind of, you know, made their mark with a lot of their RTS games and StarCraft and WarCraft, and maybe like a take on those.
And Hearthstone, right?
Yeah, well, that's another great example. One that, of course,
maybe
is free.
Maybe they can get Diablo locked exclusively to Apple platforms after all that backlash,
Yeah, but even like something that, see, the Diablo, there was a lot of backlash for that. A lot of those people just wanting the next one and not seeing why that game couldn't be, you know, something a bit more on a traditional console. But even like adapting StarCraft to like a turn-based, you know, kind of model or something really cool. I just know that Blizzard is like, you know, really competent developer, and I think they would be able to do something awesome on that service. So
they really would. Yeah. And building off that, like even Apple's partnered with Nintendo for like Mario Run and stuff. So I wonder like, oh, could you make an iPhone only Smash or Mario Kart? Like I know they're beta testing a mobile Mario Kart game for Android, I think, this summer.
Yeah, I tried to sign up, but it's Japan and USA only. I was ticked off when I saw that. I was so ready. I think that would work really well. I think it would be interesting if Nintendo, because Nintendo, I've been following the numbers of their mobile business a lot, and as success as Mario Run was, it's nothing. Like, it doesn't even sniff the success they had with Fire Emblem Warriors, their mobile Fire Emblem game, which is escaping me. I can just look at my phone and forget.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yes,
yeah.
Heroes is what it was. And they kind of had a bit of a microtransaction model that captured somebody. But I think deep down, they wanted the Mario Run model to work, right? Like they wanted the, we don't want to jam microtransactions down your throat. We don't want that to be our only way to make games possible. So this idea of a subscription service, I think that could work. Don't you think so?
Well, I think it would depend on, like as everything does, how much it costs, right? Like even to go back to Google Stadia and even go back to the Xbox Game Pass, like it depends on how much these things cost the average consumer. We even talked about this on another episode of Pod Drop when it comes to streaming services like Netflix versus Crave versus Disney Plus and so on. Like, yeah, I want to have all of them, but it also depends on how much each of them cost me per month, because if it all adds up to like $100 a month, then I'm not going to pay that, right? But it depends on like what piece of the pie costs X amount of dollars. So if it was a reasonable price, yeah, absolutely. But if it was something that perhaps, you know, costs me more than, and this is just a personal opinion on my end, but if it costs me more than, you know, a couple of coffees a month at Starbucks, which I mean are expensive, so that could probably be like $9.99, you know, $14.99 a month, then I probably wouldn't get it if it was more than that.
You know, it's definitely interesting to follow. So let's flash forward 5 years. Which of these have the best chance at, you know, I'm going to use the term again, the Netflix of gaming? We'll start with you, Riley. Which one do you think will be, whether, you know, it achieves that lofty goal or just becomes the one with the most, you know, public consciousness, which one do you think stands the chance?
I think xCloud. And I say that because I think Microsoft is playing the game properly. I think they know exactly what they're doing by baiting audiences in. I don't want to say baiting, but they're appealing to a different audience through porting their games to other platforms directly. So they're able to get a better experience on different consoles, different platforms, whether that's the mobile Gears of War strategy game that's coming out, or that is, Cuphead on Nintendo Switch. I think they're slowly easing gamers as a whole, rather than Xbox fans, into their IP. And as technology evolves to better support xCloud and reduce latency, people are gonna want to keep enjoying those experiences. So I think that Xbox has a very sound strategy, whereas Google is jumping in, 2 feet right into the deep end. Xbox is kind of dipping a toe and still appealing to their core audiences.
So in this case, Xbox is the Marvel Cinematic Universe, having established it, and Google Stadia is the DC extended, we'll say, universe.
That seems harsh to Google.
Very good way to put it, yes.
Good, but harsh. Where do you land on this?
You know, I'm kind of torn. I want to say xCloud, but I do really want to, I'm going to go with Apple. I'm going to go to the Apple Arcade, because I think when people think, this is just my opinion, but I think when people visualize Apple, the things they visualize first and foremost are your phones, I think. Even more so than MacBooks, because I think phones, you know, you use them in a more, you know, ubiquitous way, you use them in a more general fashion every single day versus, like, you know, you have it in your pocket and pull it into your hand versus having to sit down and open your computer and do stuff on it, right? So in that sense, I feel like, especially if Apple does manage to get some of these other, perhaps other publishers on board, or they come up with some IPs of their own, or whatever the case may be for Apple Arcade, I think mobile games have a lot more room to grow. And I think Apple has the clout more than perhaps other mobile platforms to make it happen. And Mark already mentioned the amount of money they're investing in it. What did you say? Like $500 million?
Yeah, that's what the report was.
That's just a tremendous amount of money, right? I got to imagine that will result in something that captures users' attentions in a way that xCloud perhaps will not, because I think that's at least slightly geared more towards people like us who are more hardcore gamers versus people like my mom, right, who might see something on the App Store and say, oh man, this looks cool. And I think that's probably, that might be the difference for Apple.
Yeah, I mean, it only takes like someone on Apple, for example, your mom, to see a game that she somehow stumbled upon. It was a friend suggested or whatever, and it's $5, or it's an exclusive to this system, and they say, oh, $5 for a month. Oh, maybe there's a trial, you know, like all these things. I just did the sports one with a couple of friends, this episode of Pod Drop, about, you know, streaming service, same way. All it takes is for them to get people into that ecosystem and hope their credit card doesn't expire, right? Like, I do think Apple has that cachet, and I also am very hopeful that it does change some of the things that have plagued mobile gaming that has turned me away, right? As mobile gaming has only found its way in this free-to-play model where eventually you're going to hit a paywall through microtransactions, has kind of kept me away. But if there's a way that they can get past that by just saying, hey, pay your $5, $10, I wouldn't say more than that, a month, and you can get a little bit more of a complete experience, I do think that's good. As for which one I think will be most prevalent, I think part of me wants to say, this is, you know, good to spread it around, I think Google actually has a chance. You have me skeptical with the technology, but as I mentioned, a theme on this show is that I do think eventually technology kind of, you know, catches up. And I just think Google is so big. I don't want to say too big to fail, because Google Plus is, as show adequately pointed out. But I did also like what you were saying, Riley, about them being able to kind of just push it forward. And when I say it's successful, I don't mean it's going to be successful for any of us. In 5 years, I don't think any of us are going to have it. In fact, I don't really think these services are meant for us as much as they're meant to usher in new people that aren't gamers. But, you know, as my son's going to be born in maybe a couple weeks, and I like to always think ahead about what world they're going to be growing up in, I can, you know, totally see a world where, you know, this, you know, my video game collection fully alphabetized that Sho has seen in my house, it might not wow him the same way, right? He'll just be like, I can just click two clicks on my little iPad that you gave me when I was 7 years old, you terrible parent. You didn't think this one far ahead. And it's crazy to think. But one thing I just wanted to end with is there room for more than one to truly thrive? Maybe we'll just put Apple Arcade aside for a second, but look at the other two and maybe any other players, whether PlayStation tries to adapt. Is there room for more than one to survive in this space? As, you know, in a world right now where we see Netflix is definitely the king, but other people are trying to make their mark to moderate success. How does that translate to the video game realm? We'll start with you, Riley.
I think the next step for PlayStation, and I think Nintendo is, and I think Ubisoft and EA would be silly not to follow. So they're going to try to do these things, like get these streaming services out there. And I think it might be a slow build. I think you might see something like Assassin's Creed. Like, we know Assassin's Creed's coming to Stadia. We know all these, like, you know, like Ubisoft's working with Nintendo for games and stuff like that. So you're going to see a lot of studios either transition to supporting these services or attempting to make services of their own. So that's why, for example, you don't see like Minecraft crossplay and stuff like that on PlayStation consoles, because I think they don't want to support that in any fashion. I think they know what that leads to. While Nintendo's like, I don't think they have the infrastructure online quite yet. So they're like, okay, well, we can make Switch a success. We can make a ton of money now while these people are building their own streaming services. And even Nintendo's talked about getting into that realm. And so is Sony publicly. So it's like, okay, so this is kind of what we're going for. But, you know, it's only a matter of time, I think.
I like the idea that you put forward, Riley, about infrastructure, because I think all of these companies would love to have something in place that's similar to this. And kudos to Microsoft and the Xbox brand for getting it off the ground seemingly first, or at least putting it into motion first. Because you mentioned the Nintendo Online system. For example, I think all three of us are relatively avid Nintendo fans, and I still think that the Nintendo Online platform, maybe compared to, let's say, Xbox Live, leaves something to be desired. And I don't know if it's born out of just a more conservative approach to how they do business in terms of Nintendo versus Microsoft, which seems to be willing to take more risks. And perhaps in time, the playing field online will level out. But, you know, I guess what I'm saying is that the infrastructure, once it's there, I think there is space in the market for all of these three things, or more than three. You mentioned Ubisoft and EA and so on, to compete, because, you know, to go back to what we talked about before, you know, there's Netflix, then there's Crave, there's Hulu, there's Disney Plus, there's CBS All Access, there's all these different services where you can pick and choose from. And it would be cool to have that for video games. And I think that consumers probably feel the same way, because I think more than anything, we as consumers like to have choice, right? And I think if you have choice, you can pick and choose and make your own meal and that kind of thing. And I think that appeals to a wide variety of people. So in that sense, to answer your question, Mark, I do think that there is space for them to all coexist.
At first I would say no, but I've been kind of swayed here a bit. And what comes to mind is another conflict with kind of the way that gaming is going is this idea of games as a service, right? Like someone, you know, I just recorded the sports one, so I hate to go back to this, but like there's a service, for example, like ESPN Plus, which doubled its subscriber base, opening its doors to UFC. So UFC fans came on, and those UFC fans didn't get in because they said, hey, I can also get X and Y and Z. All they cared about was that one thing, if the price was right. Games are trying to create a game that you only need to play one. Anthem's goal was that the people that played Anthem were just going to play Anthem. So with that in mind, I do think, based on the concept of, and I hope Google, as you said, I'm glad they are going for exclusives, as long as exclusives and unique content is the goal, as it should be in any, you know, cultural realm, the idea of unique content, I think there is a space for all of them. Does it mean that I'm going to subscribe to all three at once, or anyone? Quite frankly, maybe no, but maybe I'll be subscribed to one for a couple of months and maybe to another one. But actually, the reality is I'm terrified of all this.
You're going to subscribe and then cancel so you don't auto-renew?
Yes, exactly. And then they'll offer me back some great deal. Great callback. But also, I'm terrified of, like, I love physical collections, just as Show was kind of alluding to. And you know what? Like, the idea of digital owning games digitally is even sometimes something that I'm only now just slightly coming around to. The idea of not owning them at all is something that I'm not quite there yet, but I think the world might be a little bit ahead of me and a little bit ready for that. So thank you so much, both of you guys, for coming on. Before we leave, a couple things. Where can people find you? Twitter or what you're up to? And also, what game are you playing right now? We'll start with Show.
Oh, boy. Well, first of all, you can find me on Twitter at SNS Alley, which is spelled SNSALLI. And games I'm playing right now, I recently restarted playing the Master Chief Collection.
Oh, wow.
So, and
I am too.
Yeah, it's so much fun. I realized that, I guess because I play them all in their original forms, I never replay them on the collection, you can get the achievements all over again.
Oh, I did that when it came out. Oh, yeah.
Very pleasant surprise.
So much so that when I actually replayed them, for whatever reason, the game actually did launch to a bit of a technical hiccups. There were some more notable than others. One was that when I had gone through a couple missions, didn't recognize that I beat them. Even if it showed on the interface when I was like selecting missions, it just didn't click. So I had to go back and play them. That was the achievement hunter. That was like the deep down inside me. Like, I hated to admit it, but I'm like, everyone needs to know that I did this all in heroic mode. Let's go back. But yeah, that's a great one. No online, just doing the campaign kind of thing.
Yeah, for now, just doing the campaign. I think I'm waiting until I get to either Reach or Halo 4, then I'm going to hop into the online again.
I hopped on online just out of spur of the moment, like a couple weeks ago. I got slaughtered. Like I was like, I think our team lost like 50-7, and I was like, oh no, this is, if I was on the other team, it would probably been a hell of a lot more fun. But, Riley, where can people find you, what you're working on, and what are you playing?
Yeah, people can find me on Twitter at the Riley Little, RileyLittle. And I'm working on, man, what am I not working on? I'm currently setting up some E3 stuff. I just published a couple articles on Screen Rant today. Still working on Walmart Canada pieces. And then what I'm playing right now is the Joker DLC for Smash Brothers Ultimate.
Oh, yeah.
And that is a lot of fun. I've been having a lot of fun online with that.
I think I told you when I got into Elite Smash, I was like going to retire from the game. That did not work out that way. I have been battling to get Pit. I got so close, and then I had won, and I had fallen so far, and then I found somebody who was willing to lose 11 straight matches to me. I was like right on the cusp. I was like, don't leave. Like, let me keep beating you. And then he left. And then it was like, then I had to play someone who was actually good, and I was out of work because I had just faced a noob 11 times. But
Riley, let me tell you that when Smash Brothers came out, I saw Mark maybe like days after Smash Brothers came out, and he had like bags under his eyes. He looked like a zombie. Oh my God. I've never met someone who's played Smash Brothers more than Mark.
I can't stop playing, but I'm trying to diversify.
I like pummeled Mark too, so that's kind of sad.
He actually did. But the thing was, we have to play sometime with me not using Joy-Cons. It doesn't have to be a GameCube controller, but I'm going to go back to that. And then also, I mean, me and Riley were immediately at odds when he said he's not a Final Destination guy because people like the spam moves, and I was like, but I'm one of those people. So this Battlefield Final Destination back and forth is maybe we have to create a stage, and then we'll have to find it perfectly balanced to fight on it. But
give me Pokéfloats.
Oh yeah, the one.
Yeah,
that,
where's Pokéfloats?
The only stage, one of the only ones that didn't make it through. But yeah, now what have I been playing? It's Red Dead Redemption 2 is a game that I have maybe played 12, 15 hours, but I've only like played it 4 or 5 times. Like I just, it takes so much for me to like carve time out of my day to think that I want to play it. But when I do, like it really does hook me. But once baby comes in a couple weeks, no more Fortnite, no more Apex, because you know, I'm in the final circle. You know, there's 2 squads left. Baby starts crying. What am I going to do? Like, I don't want to be put in that position. So I got to play strictly games that I can pause. So Red Dead Redemption 2 I might be able to finally get over the hump and break through that. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Till next time.
Thank you for making it this far. If you enjoyed what you just heard, PodDrop has a growing library of episodes covering a range of topics. I promise you will find something that interests you. If you have any feedback, I would love to hear it. You can interact with me on Twitter at Mark Stanush and with the show at PodDrop Show. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and rate on Apple Podcasts. I hope to bring more stories to you soon, so sit tight. I am expecting my first child in the coming weeks, and though I am sure that will throw a wrench into my schedule, I have a feeling it will inspire many more stories to dive into.